Let's do it.
Rolls out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown, joined this evening by the full crew, starting off with the man, the myth, the legend, Teddy's best friend. Okay, maybe that was a little bit too much, but JR, what's going on, man?
What's going on, fellas? Just another day.
Is it just another day? Look at him being all modest over here. Wide receiver one, wide receiver extraordinaire, flag football MVP, Miles Gorham. What's going on, man?
You know. Just got back from playing flag football with Yinkid Bridgewater Allende.
I thought it was Yinkid Leftwich.
Leftwich, that's
not
right.
Not after tonight, man.
You know, he was wearing two gloves, though. Yinkid's wearing two gloves. But the funny part is when he threw the ball, I looked like he had slipped out of his hands, but he's still wearing gloves. So.
And we'll let the man come in and defend himself. Maybe a co-MVP? I don't know. What's going on, Sexy Prince?
Man, I'm feeling good, y'all. For weeks, my flag football team has not been performing the way we should have. Had a lot of potential. You know, have some talent on roster. But we just needed one. We needed that free agent signing that was going to take us over the top. So we went on the waivers, found Miles Gorham, gave him a call, offered him a lot of money, and say, hey, can you come in and be wide receiver one? He obliged.
Miles, did the check clear?
I was just about to say, I don't think that check cleared.
Not yet.
I'm coming,
though. It clears every third Tuesday, so you're going to need to wait for the
The way you're banking. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, we got the W, so yeah.
All right, so there's a couple things here. JR, I think you've had a chance to see some clips of the All 22, see some of the film. And so before we go too much further, JR, I'm going to need you to give us a breakdown of the film from what you were able to ascertain from Sexy Prince's performance today.
We got a long way to go. We got to rebuild those mechanics from the ground up. You know, starting with the footwork, we got a long way to go. And then we gotta change the release a little bit too. It's a little funky, but you know, we can work with it.
But how about his pocket presence? It looked like he was really navigating the pocket, doing some things that you might like in there.
Yeah. You know, he climbed the pocket a little bit and delivered downfield.
Brand.
We had one interception today though, but we can get that corrected. Go back to the film. Oh,
We had two.
He only told us about one.
I don't want to put my quarterback on, but he threw Miles, me on a deep route.
Yeah, Miles had a good route going. I should have hit him on the outside. I hit him on the inside. DB picked it off. So it's all me. It's all me. Wide receiver did what you're supposed to do.
So you're Aaron Brooks, in other words.
Does that make me Joe Horn?
I guess so.
Oh, I guess you got to tell us what the celebration was, though.
Right.
I didn't. I already told you I don't really celebrate.
Okay, Miles actually was very humble on the field.
How many touchdowns today, Miles?
I don't know.
Prince, how many touchdowns for Miles?
Miles had at least – he definitely had three touchdowns. He might have had – he had four. He had three – receiving touchdowns and one pick six.
Oh boy. Okay.
And a 2-point conversion.
All right.
Instant impact.
Prince went and found himself a ringer.
If you give me a wide receiver one, I will play to my fullest potential. My assault tonight.
Yeah, I did.
That was the best.
We'll talk about a little bit later on too.
I saw you truck one of the girls, and I was like, "Oh, all right, he's ready." He's ready to go today.
Hey, Yinka's ready to play.
Women are equal, man. So.
That's what I told you. Yinka is a feminist. When they are on the field together, Yinka treats everybody as an equal. Ain't nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think that's enough recapping the flag football game. I think Miles Yinka ended up going out there and doing work, winning by 3 or 4 touchdowns. Going to try to get some footage together, put a little something up for everyone to see the highlights of their domination. But, I mean, we got a lot to talk about, so I think we need to hop right into it. But before we get into the episode, there was one thing that I wanted to do here. And I wanted to thank everyone who's listened thus far. I was looking today and realized that we made it over 10,500 listens, which is crazy, given we just started this a couple months back or a few months back. So definitely want to thank everyone who's listening. Definitely want to thank everyone who went on and reviewed us on iTunes. Means a lot to us, and we're going to keep doing this for a while. And I guess now, with what's been going on lately, this show is now the flagship show for Climbing the Pocket Radio, because now we will have, you know, the Climbing the Pocket podcast, we'll have the Pocket Protector podcast, and coming up next, we're going to have the Climbing the Big Board podcast. So I know we were going to pitch this at the end. I guess, JR, Miles, do one of y'all want to hop in and let the folks know what's coming up here?
Yeah, so Climbing the Big Board podcast is something Miles and myself decided to start, just a draft-centric podcast, just because, you know, we try to cater Climbing the Pocket more to Vikings-related and more, you know, sports, entirely sports-related. But Climbing the Big Board will strictly be a podcast about draft talk, you know, 30 to 35-minute show, just addressing some thoughts around, you know, some college football prospects, risers, fallers, and even, you know, some fans Q&A, just giving some insights into the draft.
That's awesome. Can't wait for that to hit the station. And when can we expect the first episode?
First episode will be out this upcoming Thursday.
Well, all right. Looking forward to it. Well, let's talk about this game this week, because there was a lot to talk about. And obviously, Vikings Packers faced off. Vikings come out with the big win. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers is knocked out of this game, which obviously really changed the complexion of not just our division, but the NFC overall. So, JR, I'll start with you, man. I guess, what were your thoughts on the game now that you've had a chance to really go back and break it down? And kind of what are your thoughts on kind of where the division goes from here with Aaron Rodgers knocked out?
Overall, I thought it was a sloppy game from both teams, whether that was from the Packers and the Vikings. But overall, I thought the Vikings played well in the game despite some sloppy points in the game. There was a couple turnovers. I know Jerry McKinnon had a fumble. Case Keenum had an interception that led to Packers points, and that's really what kept them in the game. You know, them being hampered with so many injuries throughout the game and even coming into the game, you would like to have seen the Vikings separate from them earlier, but it just didn't happen. So offensively, I thought they played okay. The one thing I was happy to see was them get Jerry McKinnon involved in various ways. We saw the screen game improve. You know, we saw him run between the tackles and even on the perimeter as well. There was a Laquon Treadwell sighting, which is really good. And Adam Thielen stepped up as well. I thought Case Keenum could have played a little better. He was inaccurate on a lot of throws, and there was guys running open. He just wasn't able to get it to him. I thought the defense played well, as usual, as we expected, you know, with Aaron Rodgers going down. So I thought it was a little sloppy, but, you know, a win is a win. And, you know, I hope Aaron Rodgers gets better. You never want to see a guy like that get hurt. So I was pleased. And divisional outlook, I think, is going to come down to us and the Lions right now. And they have the tiebreaker over us right now just because they won the first game. But we have a chance to even the series later on when we match up against them in the season.
And Miles Gorham. Miles, sure. I mean, you went out there and were able to ball today, so you didn't injure yourself too much celebrating. But how happy were you to see your man's Laquon go out there and do a little something? Was it 3 for 51? But the highlight, one-handed grab where it actually looked like he was able to jump and get both his feet off the ground. Miles Gorham, what were your thoughts on the game, and what were your thoughts on how the wide receivers played particularly?
Yeah, I think kind of the whole game changed once Rodgers got hurt. I really think the Vikings offense just kind of went on cruise control once Rodgers went hurt, got hurt. Because I thought the defense played great. They played their asses off. Excuse my language. They played really well as usual. They held what should have been basically a shutout turned into 10 points off of two turnovers. That's the only reason the Packers scored on offense is because of the return by Clay Matthews on the fumble return and the pick by Case Keenum. That's the only two drives that the Packers scored on. Otherwise, the defense played lights out. Offensively, moving down the road a little bit is the run game. Overall, I think the way they used Jerick McKinnon was great. But I don't know if it's going to be something that's sustainable. I hope it is. Maybe I'm wrong. Doesn't look like he's got any burst to him. He's still trying to recover from that ankle surgery. But he doesn't look like he's got any explosion or he can't get to the outside at all, can't get to the edge. He's not outrunning anybody. When they threw that toss to him, I was like, oh, Lord, what are they doing? Because you knew he wasn't going to beat the linebacker to the edge, which he didn't, and which is unfortunate because – you are going to need Murray down the road. So it's not one of those like, oh, we have someone coming back to replace him or anything like that. We don't. We have Murray and we have McKinnon. Unless they go and pick somebody up off the waivers or something. Those are the two guys we have. And I think Jets played well, but overall the run game does worry me because I don't think McKinnon can be I don't think he can sustain as a lead dog running back. So hopefully they find a way to kind of shore that up a little bit. The receivers, I thought the receivers did play well. Adam Thielen stepped up kind of like he did last year against Houston. I think it's crazy how many receiving yards he has and how many catches he has without any touchdowns, though. So I'm kind of waiting for them to get him in the end zone. Thought not really much for Michael Floyd. Sounds like he got hurt midway through the game. And then, yeah, like you said, Treadwell, they finally gave Treadwell some opportunities and he got himself open on a few plays, and he made a couple plays. That one-handed catch was really great. I'll admit, I stood up out of my chair and started clapping like I was his mom or something. But I was
worried about you when I was watching the game. I was like, I really hope Miles doesn't pull a hamstring celebrating this one before he's got the big game on.
I was definitely a proud parent because I was like, I know he can make plays like that, and I know he can make contested catches and he can do things like that. So finally being able to see him kind of do that. And I think, I was out there today playing flag football and people were like, you know, calling it the Treadwell, which that's not going to last long, but,
it was last for me.
It was a sick catch though. And I just think it's something, it'll help boost his confidence. It'll help, I think, boost the coach's confidence in using him more often, which is great. If, you know, especially if guys like Diggs and Floyd are out any longer than they are. Than this last week, so you're going to need Treadwell if those guys are going to stay hurt. So I think he played well overall, and his blocking was really good. The blind side, I don't think he intentionally tried to hurt him. He didn't really do much. Those are just one of those bad situations where it's hard to hold up and not hit a guy, but at the same time he needs to know a little bit better to just kind of get in the way, kind of like a basketball pick in that situation instead of clean that dude's clock. But I mean, it's a physical play, which you like to see. It pumps people up, whether it was a flag or not. Overall though, I thought the team played well. I think they should be able to steamroll a team like Baltimore this week if all goes as planned, but you never know. But overall, I thought the game was good.
Yeah, and it's a really great point that you raised about the running backs, because you know, Prince wrote a great article about it, getting into to success rate, and that is one of the things I think that is potentially being overlooked a little bit. So you know, I'm a Jet truther. I, you know, joke about it all the time on here and on Twitter. And when you kind of look at the I guess traditional statistics, there's a slight drop off in yards per carry, but it's nothing crazy. I think Jets at 4.5, you know, Dab was at 4.8. So, I mean, when you look at it at the surface, both seem to be doing a great job. But then when you go and you look at success rate, I mean, Jet is doing way worse from a success rate perspective. I think, Dalvin Cook, based on the road of his screener, was successful on 54% of his runs, whereas with Jet, you're only getting, you know, 33% success rate, which is huge in terms of, you know, maintaining drives and consistently maintaining drives, finishing games, which is something that, you know, Flip and I were having a conversation about, something that Dalvin was really, really able to do well as the closer and come in there and those successful runs, keeping the, keeping you on schedule and letting you really milk that clock by having long grinding drives. And so that's something to the point that you raised there to see, you know, are we going to be able to continue to sustain the run game, or is it going to kind of be back like the old, like the AP days where it was, you know, you know, 1 yard, 2 yards, 1 yards, 2 yards, 50 yards, 1 yard, 2 yards, and kind of that disjointed waiting for the big play to happen type of thing. So,
hold on. Yeah. You said the AP days, like that was a consistent thing that happened. I know what you're getting at, but let's not talk like that was like a 3 or 4 year thing. But I totally understand what you're saying.
But in terms of, and again, I'm going to reference, you know, Prince's article, and jump in here. It's like AP as a runner was known as that guy who would get bottled up, home run.
Yeah.
Versus like
he wears defenses down.
Yeah. Versus a guy like a Frank Gore who seemed to always get you 3.5 to 4 yards and everyone and kept your offense on schedule a little bit more. So that's more what I was referencing is AP success rate wasn't typically great, even though his yards per carry was always awesome because he'd hit those long plays. But, you know, since I've been talking about your article all these times here, Prince, I guess I should let you jump in.
Real quick, though, I'll touch on what you said about grinding down the clock and everything toward the end of the game. That's where I think when they signed him, Latavius Murray's job was supposed to be that. But if he's a guy that's not going to be able to get more than 2 or 3 yards a pop, that's a big problem because I think, you know, like you said with Dalvin Cook, he's one of those guys, at least what we saw in the sample size we had with him, he was wearing defenses down. He was getting defenses tired, and he was having big runs in the fourth quarter when you needed him to. But we don't really have that right now. We don't have that running back because Latavius Murray doesn't look to be that guy right now where he can wear down a defense enough at the point during the game where, you know, if you need to milk the clock a little bit, he's not really sustaining anything. So I think that is a key point you brought up, Jason.
Yeah, Latavius looks bad. He does not look good at all. Like, he just looks – if it's not blocked for him or he has to make more than one cut, it's just over for him. And I think the thing that's most frustrating – he did have a nice catch. But for him to be, what, 230? It just feels like every time he gets touched, he's immediately going down. Like, every time.
I agree.
So, anyway, Saxy Prince, hop in, man. What were your thoughts on the game? What were your thoughts on kind of, you know, the running game, passing game, defense, you know, anything you want to get into?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very clear that this defense is still a top-notch defense. I mean, the run defense was there were a few plays where I saw, obviously, Green Bay have a chance to either pop a big one or that they did pop a big one, because you can just tell the effect of being able to use Harrison Smith on the line of scrimmage or Everson Griffin and, you know, Danielle Hunter and Linval Joseph being able to just constantly collapse the pocket. Granted, Green Bay, his offensive line was way more injured for this game. But I just think that you can see the effect of being able to move around a player like Harrison Smith. I think Anthony Harris's play was a little bit underrated. I think he played pretty well. And, you know, I don't want him to be playing over Sendejo and stuff, but you definitely see some intangible skills that he has that, you know, if Harrison Smith had a little bit more of a roam to be able to move around, you could obviously see his effect with, you know, him having two interceptions. So defensively stout, I still think Trey Waynes is an anomaly. I just don't understand that guy. He's fantastic at tackling and is pretty astounding. Not to say corners can't be good against the run, but I mean, I think he's like one of the top in the league right now against run defense. But he will end up either giving up a big play or a penalty or whatever the case is. And then he always comes with the, crucial game clinching interception for some reason. So I thought defensively they played very, very well. Offensively, it's still, like I've said before, I've criticized this offense because I'm still a little bit worried. You know, Green Bay didn't have all its key defensive guys. Morgan Burnett was out. I just think should have been a game where they should have been able to take advantage even more so of that, you know, that depleted secondary. And they didn't as much as they should have. Granted, Diggs was out, so obviously that puts more pressure on Thielen. But, you know, that's when I expect a guy like Kyle Rudolph, let's be honest, he's kind of disappeared a little bit from this offense, and I wanted him to take a bigger step forward because we are going to need him down the stretch. I can guarantee you we get into week 12 and 13 when guys like Diggs, maybe they start to break down a little bit more. You need that third guy to come in and really contribute a lot. And for us, in the beginning of the season, it was Dalvin. Now we need guys like Treadwell and Michael Floyd, Kyle Rudolph. They need to start taking up that lion's share that Dalvin was kind of getting and really producing at a higher level than they are. So the passing game is still worrisome to me. I think the run game, it kind of is what it is at this point. I do want to see Jerick McKinnon get a little bit more involved. But, I think Jerick McKinnon.
Wait, more involved than he was yesterday? Because he was involved a lot.
Yeah, more involved how?
I know. I guess it's less about him getting him more involved, and then maybe it's more about getting Latavius Murray less involved. He does have to clean up some of
they can't give Jet the entire workload the way they were able to give Dalvin Cook the workload, though, because Jet's not built that way to be able to sustain that. So that
I've seen him taking a few shots where it. I mean, I thought he was going to be out for the game, and he got back up and he was ready to go.
Yeah, but I'm not
disagreeing.
You do that throughout a whole game or a few games that you can't. It can't. It's not a sustainable thing, is what I'm saying.
I'm not just talking about obviously in the run game. I'm also talking about like getting him more involved in the passing game to potentially make him that third or fourth weapon that we can use. Because I mean, obviously he can catch the ball. I keep remembering the game when we were in Green Bay in 2015 when Teddy missed the him on the wheel route. Like I want to see him do more as far as that, getting him involved in that way, not just pounding him between the tackles or. Running from the gun and stuff. So
12 to 15 touches is probably max.
Yep, and that's a great point. As far as running, a great point that you're raising there, Prince, because when you do look at McKinnon on PFF, his run grade is not good at all, but his receiving grade is actually very, very good. So getting him out in space and getting him the ball where he can just use his athleticism and go, I think that is obviously a better usage. The problem is just Latavius has been so bad. Yeah. They can't not run Jet right now because Latavius is averaging 2.4 yards a carry or something crazy like that. So.
But they can't afford – you can't – at this stage, though, you cannot afford to lose Jerick McKinnon, Jet.
No, you can't.
Like, you can't.
Because, I mean, that just means that maybe C.J. Ham has to be less of a fullback, more of a running back. And, I mean, you can even get C.J. Ham involved in a little bit more. Given the fact that we are depleted – not depleted necessarily, but Dalvin was such a huge part of this offense, and you take him away, and
they have to kind of reinvent the offense a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean it's fine because you have a few weeks. Yeah, you have a few weeks with some, maybe some defensively lighter guy, lighter teams that you're going to be facing. That maybe you can figure out an identity in the offense. I'm just worried about come week 13, 12, 13, we're still not really having this identity on offense of where we're going. Diggs coming back will help that, but one of my criticisms of Diggs is he's going to be gone for maybe two or three games every year. So again, it's really important that that third guy steps up, like Laquan or Michael Floyd or Kyle Rudolph.
Okay, so we're going to go rapid fire here because obviously Aaron Rodgers being out really shakes things up in the division. JR already said he thinks it comes down to Vikings, Detroit, and the NFC North. But then you're looking around a lot of the games that happened over the weekend, and it doesn't really seem to be a dominant team in the NFC, at least right now. So, JR, I'll start with you, I guess. Who are your top couple teams in the NFC, and how do you, and who do you, I guess, do you see would be, as things currently stand, to be, the favorite in the NFC overall?
I got to go with the Philadelphia Eagles. I think they look for real. I think their defense is for real. Carson Wentz is improving. Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith have been great additions for him. The running game still struggling a little bit, but LeGarrette Blount does a good job from time to time, and they rotate that number two back spot. But I think the development of Carson Wentz has really helped propel the Eagles to that next level. It feels a lot different from their start last year because it seems like they have some sustainability and they're not just a flash in the pan team like they were at the beginning of last year. So I think they're riding high on that defense and the development of Carson Wentz. So I think the Eagles are definitely a threat in the NFC, and I think they're the top team right now.
All right. Miles, do you agree or do you have somebody different?
No, I totally agree. I'd say it'd be the Eagles. I think to touch on Jarrett's point, the guys like Torrey Smith and Alshon Jeffrey have been big contributors. And you get thrown a guy like Nelson Agholor who looks like he's kind of coming into his own, which is big for them. And then I think after that, it's kind of a toss-up. I think the Rams are a lot better than they're getting credit for. I'm not saying they're a top team in the NFC, but I think they have a really good defense. They run the ball really well, and Jared Goff's not turning the ball over all that often. So they're getting there. So I think they're a pretty good team in the NFC. And then obviously the Vikings, Lions, Seahawks,
Oh, snap. I think we lost Miles there. His face appears to be frozen. So, Prince, we'll slide it right along to you, and you can let us know who are your teams to beat in the NFC and how do you think we stack up?
Yeah, absolutely. I agreed with Jared. I was going to go Philadelphia, but just to have a different opinion, I was going to say the LA Rams because it does look like on both sides of the ball, they are even more so a complete team. I think Jared Goff is taking a step forward. I'm still a little bit skeptical, but it looks like what McVay is doing is making just things easier for him to understand how to play football at this level. Obviously, Todd Gurley is a fantastic back. I think the addition of Sammy Watkins is really helping Goff out. Aaron Donald is one of the best players in the league, not just at his position, but just in the league. So I think on both sides of the ball, you have a complete team, much like the Philadelphia Eagles. And as far as maybe that third place, I think it is a little bit more in the air. I'd probably put the Vikings right there as be more of a complete team who has a great defense and depth players on both sides of the ball. So that'd probably be my 1-2-3 Eagles, Rams, and Vikings.
All right. Well, I feel like we've talked about the game enough, talked about the outlook for the Vikings and some general Vikings talk. So let's talk about the big news that happened in the land of Vikings today. News started to come out. The man is going to be back, Teddy Bridgewater. And this one, obviously, I feel like we got to start things off as we do normally. But this one, we're going to give him a little bit more time to talk to our man, JR, who released an awesome article today on Vikings territory. If you haven't already checked it out, please go do that. The link to it will be in the show notes. JR, Teddy's coming back. What are your thoughts? And then tell us a little bit about the process that led you to writing that awesome article that you put up today.
First and foremost, shout out to Teddy for actually letting me release the article and just some quotes from him just to, give fans a little insights into his journey and what he was thinking during his injury journey and the things that he went through. The article is basically just going back over his career from draft night to, that dark and gloomy day, like I say in the article, just going back through his injury and his whole process through his head and what he was thinking through everything. And, just from a random Twitter follow back between me and him and a couple of conversations that we had, I just share a few quotes that he left me with and what stood out the most between, our relationship that we developed or our bond that we developed since he's been injured. But, I think it's big news for the Vikings. We don't know how he'll respond, now that he's off the PUP list. I mean, nobody does. Even he doesn't know how he's going to respond or how his knee is going to respond. Who is Teddy Bridgewater now? Nobody knows. That pre-injury guy is in the past now. We don't know if he'll ever return to that form or what he is. He might be worse. He might be better. We won't know. And the only way we will know or find out is, in the game. We don't know how he's going to respond to taking a hit, how he's going to respond to facing some adversity or when guys are running at him and running at that knee. So I'm happy for him. I can't wait to see him back on the field on Wednesday, the practice field. And hopefully we could get to see him back in the game once again.
Man, that's awesome. And Miles, first you, then Prince, what are your thoughts? Story broke. Teddy's coming back. And what are your thoughts, not just for, the immediate future, I guess, what are your thoughts on when we might see him on the field again?
Yeah, I think JR's article was fantastic. And I don't know how you could not root for a guy like Teddy Bridgewater coming back from that gruesome injury and how you could just be negative about it, because it's just so – it's inspiring, because a guy like that, he's not supposed to come back. He's not supposed to be, back in 14, 15 months after an injury like that. He's just supposed to be done. So it's great to see that. And I can't remember who said it on Twitter, so I apologize if so I don't know who said it, but someone mentioned that, you know, if Teddy Bridgewater takes one snap this season, he should be the NFL comeback player of the year. Cause like to be able to come back from that kind of injury at all and to come back and actually play in a game, that's just phenomenal. Whether it's just one play. But I think as you'd mentioned about when we could expect him to play, I think JR and Prince, and you guys have all touched on it a lot. I think it could be, you know, right after the bye, them coming after the bye, see how, depending on how his knee holds up, you know, after a few weeks of practice. It could be the London game right before the bye. We might even see, maybe we just see him for, you know, maybe depending on how the game goes, you see him just toward the end of the game, something like that, just to kind of get him some game reps before you decide to start him. That would only be in a scenario, in my opinion, though, where, like, you know, let's say it's the fourth quarter and you're up by quite a bit of points, just to kind of get him a couple snaps, even if it's just like a series, just to let him have that, to get the jitters out of the way. Something like that could be something I could see happening. And because we know, unfortunately, how bad the Browns have been so far this season. So that could be a scenario I think could happen. Otherwise, I think the game right after the bye against Washington or coming home, who was that?
The Rams.
Thank you. The Rams could be the game when they come back home. Could be the potential game too. So I'd say one of those. Otherwise, I'm just super excited to see him come back in general, to see and see how that knee responds and see how he does. Because no matter what, I want to root for him to do well in life. So I'm excited.
It's awesome. And Prince, you know, bring us home on this one, but also give us your thoughts on, I guess, you know, Teddy coming back and what ultimately you think this means for Sam and his future with the Vikings.
Yeah, I'll address the second thing first. I've said this before. I think Sam's going to go on IR. It just from everything we've seen last week and just him gimping around, it just doesn't seem like this is a guy who can play football at least for, you know, a month or two. So you put him on IR and stuff, and obviously that frees up a spot for, you know, Teddy to come back and be activated and stuff. You don't have to let go of maybe another piece that you want to hang on to. But I've been, you know, it hasn't been no secret how I feel about Teddy Bridgewater. I remember watching his tape very, very closely, him, Manziel, Bortles, and a few other guys. And for me, it was clear who was the, you know, number one quarterback coming out of that draft class. You know, and he just so happened to, you know, join my favorite team. But him coming back after, you know, 14 months, you know, rehabbing and getting to watch the process, it's been phenomenal. You know, it's been great to see a guy who has clearly had a lot of adversity around him with his mom, you know, with his upbringing and stuff. And, you know, just really being a guy who's always shown leadership no matter what the circumstances are. I'm with Miles when I say, like, I can't honestly understand anybody who roots against them unless they have some kind of ulterior motive. You know, if he never becomes, you know, the Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees type quarterback, you know, even so, he's, I think he's done a lot for the state of Minnesota, just with, you know, giving us hope again. You know, after the 2015 season, I think this state had a lot of hope, which we haven't had in, you know, since 2009 when Brett Favre left. So I think it's fantastic. I'd like to see him on the field, you know, like Miles would say, maybe after bye week 11 would be a nice game. You know, if we are blowing out the Browns in London, that would be a perfect game to put him in, get to see him and see what he's going to be doing or how well he's doing, and, you know, just get a mini assessment before the bye. Because, you know, for all you know, you put him in a game, and then the very next day, you know, the knee starts to flare up, you know, and something's going awry. So, you know, we at least get to see him a little bit. So, otherwise, like I said, the news is great, and I'm excited to see him play.
And I know that kind of when we've been talking about this for a while, most of us have been pretty conservative in terms of when we say we would want to see Teddy back, you know, on the field. But most of the conversations we were having about this before were, you know, in the context of us having, you know, a healthy Sam Bradford, you know, a Case Keenum out there. And so, you know, depending on how guys are playing, no need to necessarily rush or anything like that. But, I mean, we got the win, but Case Keenum played really bad in this game against Green Bay. They weren't able to capitalize on the mistakes that he made, but I mean, he played a really bad game. And I mean, Baltimore overall as a team is dreadful. I mean, their offense is as JR typically says, is dumpster juice. But I mean, their defense is their defense is legitimate. I mean, their defense isn't allowing a lot of points as bad as the offense is playing. I think they are 11th in points allowed right now, season to date. So, I mean, let's say Chase goes out there and plays a game like he played against Green Bay against a better defense and potentially cost us a game that we should win or a game or puts up a clunker against, you know, against the Browns. I guess, does that change your outlook at all in terms of, you know, how quickly Teddy sees the field, or are you still kind of, you know, play it conservative, let Case go out there, take his lumps, and then, you know, Teddy still comes back later in the season? JR, I'll go to you first.
I still continue to believe that we won't see Teddy until after the bye week. I don't like the Washington game being a target date for him just because that field is so terrible, and I don't think his first game back needs to be on that surface. But if Case – I won't say if he continues to play that he's playing, but I think they already know what Case Keenum is. I mean, we all know in this circle what Case Keenum is. He's a glorified backup quarterback or a high-end backup quarterback simply because you don't know which Case Keenum is going to show up on Sundays. He can show up and play how he did against Tampa Bay, or he could show up and play how he did against the Packers, or play how he did against the Steelers. It's just how his career is being. And that's why I don't think he's an NFL starter, just because he's too much of a wild card on Sundays. You don't know what you're getting out of Case Keenum, and that's not what you want out of your quarterback on Sundays, just because there's no stability and you don't know what you're going to get out of him. And I think that's why I don't want to say they're going to throw Teddy out there, but they want to see what they have in Teddy before 2018, because they don't want to enter free agency with him not knowing what he is going into next season. And it makes sense because, you know, either they're going to have to pay him or they're going to have to let him go. And they don't want a situation to occur where, you know, they've rehabbed him all this time and got his legs so much better where another team profits off of all their hard work that they put into Teddy's rehab. That's another reason why I think they want to see Teddy on the field at some point this year as well. So I think week 11 against the Rams is the target date for him. You know, I don't know. I don't have any inside information. He hasn't told me anything or anything like that, but I've been saying that since the summer because I think that's the date that makes the most sense for Teddy to come back.
And then the follow-up point, and I'll open this up to Miles and then to Yinka, is I know that one of the things that people are concerned about is, you know, obviously Teddy being a little bit rusty, having been away from, I mean, we'll say, you know, real action, but he did play in the preseason. But I mean, how good does a quarterback actually need to be with the weapons that we have around him? So Diggs is, I think, still top five on PFF. Thielen's number eight. I think Rudolph is top 10 at the tight end position. Jett is top 10 in receiving from the running back position. And when you look at it right now and you do a comparison and you're looking at Case Keenum and how he's played, even with all the ups and downs this season, I mean – for the most important numbers, he's having a better statistical season than Sam Bradford even had last year. And it's not to say Case Keenum is better than Sam Bradford. He's just surrounded by, you know, great weapons who are out there making plays. So would that influence, or do you think that might be something that would influence the Vikings being willing to maybe put Teddy out there a little bit more quickly if he's healthy, especially given what Andrew Kramer tweeted out today, that Teddy's basically been taking a game plan home with them and going through kind of, you know, the game scripts and the game plans every week to help himself get mentally ready. Well, Miles, I'll kick that one to you.
Yeah, I think I didn't even know that he's been mentally preparing. That's, you know, it's pretty cool. I think for the longest time, I didn't think I want him to play this season just because, you know, I didn't know how the recovery process would be. I didn't know how the whole scenario would be for him just because it's so tough, you know, because it's one of those uncommon injuries we don't really know about. So I wasn't sure how things would go, but it sounds like he's going to play, and he's got that mindset that he's going to play. So I think that, like you had said, the team's got that mindset too, that, you know, whenever they feel he's ready to go in that 3-week window that they have, you know, about activating him or not, you know, as long as they see enough from him, you know, his knee reacts well after a few practices and everything like that, and he looks comfortable, I think they're going to throw him out there. I think the points you guys made about Case Keenum being the backup. That's what he is. That's what he was brought in to do. He wasn't brought in to be the potential long-term quarterback. Obviously, things can always change for any player. You know, if they play well enough, they can earn themselves that opportunity. But like you guys said earlier, I think we know what Case Keenum is. And I think he's only going to be able, only potentially going to be able to play so many games at a, you know, decently high level until he starts to plateau and kind of get back to that average or, you know, slightly below average starter quality. And then that's where, you know, you need your actual starting quarterback to come in and come back from, you know, injury or whatever that be to replace a guy like Case Keenum, because you kind of tapped him out, because that's what the backup quarterback's supposed to be. They're supposed to be somebody that can come in and sustain and win games or be relevant for, you know, a few weeks at a time. So that's kind of the hope and what seems like to be the plan with Case and Teddy Bridgewater. So to me, as long as Teddy's good to go and he's, you know, he's his knee's reacting well and his mentally, he feels good to go. I think, like I said earlier, though, I really would like to be able to see him get a few reps, a few in-game reps, you know, what if a game's out of hand or something, you know, before the bye or even like right after the bye, just to get him, you know, some game action. Because I think starting a game would be really tough to do. But I mean, maybe I'm completely wrong, JR. You could probably touch better on this than I can. But, you know, come in a little cold, you know, in the middle of the game, or is it, do you think it'd be better for him to be able to just start off the game and go from there? Because I think, personally, I think if he could just get a few of those reps in a game without the pressure of, you know, having to win a game or the pressure of really having to do anything besides just focus on getting the jitters out of the way and getting that first hit from a player, you know, and all that, and getting up from that hit. So I don't know what you guys think of that.
Yeah, I think it would be best if he's, like, prepared to start a game, just because not knowing when you'll go in, it's a little different. And we've seen that with a lot of backup quarterbacks, even this season, when Case had to, you know, go in. He started the game against Pittsburgh, but he didn't really know that he was starting the game. So it's just a little different when you know, when you're preparing as if you're the starter as opposed to going in as the backup. And it is like a cold feeling, because as a starter, you're getting reps throughout the week and you're in tune with the game plan. But as a backup, maybe you're not getting as many reps throughout the week, and there's certain plays you don't feel confident in, as opposed to if you're the starter, the offensive coordinator like Pat Shurmur is going to call plays that you feel comfortable with throughout the week.
And Saxy Prince, heading on over to you here, I guess, was there anything else that you wanted to add in terms of thoughts on Teddy, when he's going to be back, you know, thoughts on the preparation, any final words about JR's awesome article that he wrote about Teddy that you wanted to get in there before we move off this topic and kind of move towards wrapping this thing on up?
Yeah, no, first of all, shout out to JR. I, like I said, I read that article twice because it was so good, you know, just being able to, you know, I think we as fans, the reason why we get so excited to read articles like that is because it gets us a little bit closer to the players. And you know, we don't always get quotes from them, you know, besides the interviews and stuff. So we really get a lot of the cliches that players will give us. I mean, Teddy's definitely known for his cliches that he gives. So it's just nice to get some insight. As far as this, I think I was one of the few that wanted Teddy to play this season. I think, you know, JR had said, I mean, it's very clear that Case Keenum is a backup. He's going to be career backup. I think there's still a chance someone might, you know, bring him and pay him a little bit more just to, you know, be that bridge guy. I don't know if he'll actually do it, but, you know, I think he's better than a lot of backups out there that who've received money, you know, even though they are, a lot of them are younger and stuff. But, you know, if he can give you a little bit of something, you know, the high volatility that he has in his play, I think that's enough for a team to be like, hey, I'll take him for, you know, a season while my rookie just gets ready to play an NFL team. But as far as my mentality about this Teddy situation, it's always been the reason why I wanted Teddy to get on is you need to answer that question, you know, moving forward. And it either needs to be a question where it's, you know, you're moving forward with a guy like Case and really looking back into this draft and picking a guy who you think is going to be your starter of the future. I'm not saying don't draft a quarterback if that's not the case. I'm just saying changes where you know, pick that quarterback. But Teddy has proven himself to be able to be a capable starter. Now, do we want to see more out of him? Absolutely. But I think it is very, very important for the Vikings to answer the question, who is this guy? Who is he going to be for moving forward? Is he going to be a guy who can be the face of our franchise again? And I think that question is just as important. Winning is the most important, obviously, but I think, you know, in, you know, long-term future, when you have to answer those kinds of questions, that's going to be a question you need to answer. So it's in the Vikings' best interest to get him on the field. Not rush him, but definitely get him sooner rather than later. Give him enough games. If Vikings are going to throw a few, you know, as we've seen in his last couple of games, quarterback play hasn't been hugely important to the success of us winning and losing over the last couple of games. You know, if Teddy's going to knock off the rust, these next few games are definitely definitely the games where we should get that. Ravens' offense is abysmal. Definitely it'd be a game where, you know, if Teddy's thrown in there, I'm not saying that he's going to be, I'm just saying if he's thrown in there, you probably don't need to see very much from him, but you can at least get a picture where he's at. You go play in London, a Cleveland Browns team who's really not that good. That'd be a great game to get him back into. You know, just to see where he's at. Like I said, you'd be able to get him into a game, and maybe the knee starts flaring up again, you would at least have the bye week to, you know, get that rehab and see if that's going to be a consistent thing. So getting Teddy has always been, in my opinion, something the Vikings need to do this season, a question they need to have answered.
One thing I do not agree with, though, is I think if his knee does flare up at all, they're going to shut him down because they can't – you don't want to risk anything there.
No, absolutely. I'm just saying as far as having a guy as your starter, you know,
that's sure.
If it flares up, then obviously he just goes back into the shadows, you know.
Yeah.
You know, he hit the reset button, he's done. But, I mean, if it doesn't, then you might have a guy that you need to, you know, franchise tag for next year and then move forward with, you know, if you can get back Case for a low-end backup, you know, draft another guy, and now you have some position solidified for at least a year or two. So
Case about to get franchised for $20 million.
Getting it. You ain't about to break the bank for Case and make Jerick McKinnon the highest paid backup running back in the NFL.
I'm just saying, I would not be surprised if someone wants to pay Case. I wouldn't pay him that much. I'm just saying, I think a team would be desperate enough to be like, hey,
I'm going to get a guy. $13 million.
$13 million over what you could be paying at that position? I mean, that's kind of a bargain. So,
all right. So before we get up out of here.
I'll give him $13 million over 3 years. I'm not doing it over one.
Boom. So we got to get to the most important question of the entire show before we figure out, you know, what upcoming projects folks have and things like that. JR, what kind of draft grade are you putting on Saxy Prince?
I need another game to evaluate. I can't, you know, I can't just go off one game.
I'll be honest. That game, I didn't play the greatest, but that game was like playing the New Orleans Saints.
The what?
Like DBs were not the New Orleans Saints. The DBs weren't great at all. Miles was behind the defense as soon as I hiked the snap. I mean,
and Miles, you were worried about you were worried about your deep speed today. You know,
I've always been worried about my deep speed.
I mean,
Miles was taking the top off the defense, man.
I mean, it is a Mike Wallace revenge game this week.
Oh boy,
it is.
Xavier Rhodes about to lock up Mike Wallace.
Oh man, that Ravens passing game is terrible.
Joe Flacco, the elite quarterback.
Waka Flacco. I think Flacco is probably the reason that Saxy Prince hates quarterbacks getting paid so much. Just him by himself is the reason that Yinka turned against the QB position.
Them winning the Super Bowl was like the worst long-term situation that could happen for the Ravens. But they'll take it because they won the Super Bowl.
He had the four highly, like, the, you know, the volatility that you have with some of these quarterbacks. He had them at the perfect time, four back-to-back, and they're like, hey, let's go pay this guy for the future.
$45 million dead cap until 2020 to get rid of him.
Whew.
Yikes. Whew.
Well, we'll obviously get into that game a little bit later on in the week, I guess. Miles, JR, Prince, anything upcoming that we should be looking out for? I know that Miles and JR probably go to do a little bit of prep for this for the upcoming pod, but anything else we should be looking for?
Mock draft on Thursday.
Okay.
Full first round.
Oh, snap.
So,
hey, how you feel about Quentin Nelson, though?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you're taking Quentin Nelson.
Vikings Twitter is going to make me hate him by April.
And Miles, what about you, man? You got the new computer fired up?
Yeah, I'm working on a mini article about a few players I like in the draft that could be potential fits for the Vikes. Nothing, awesome. nothing too in depth yet, but just a few guys that I initially like.
And I don't know. I mean, Zaxy Prince, should I ask you? Because I mean, you were talking about, you know, getting some quotes and stuff, you know, that were like different kind of stuff and talking to players and everything like that. You know, what you got going on for us? I heard people like reading articles about Teddy Bridgewater. And there it is again. Every time we bring it up, he just drops right off the pod. So I guess Miles, it's just you and me here to say goodbye to the people. Once again, my name is Jason Brown. You find me on Twitter, Brown Jason. Saxy Prince has come back to say goodbye to everybody, as has JR. So we will talk to you guys again soon. JR, say goodbye to the people, man.
Goodbye, folks.
Miles, you too. Saxy Prince, later. Sign off.
Yeah. See y'all.
All right, man. We will talk to you guys soon. And thank you for listening to this episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. Have a good one.
Oh my goodness, we're definitely going to win. I hope we're going to win because we're definitely going to win. We have 23 points. Why would we lose when the other team is going to lose? They got 10 points and we got 23.